In brief, that of the three characteristics, anicca, dukkha, anatta, in the way I've experienced things, the anicca is the hardest one to really penetrate, because we all assume we know anicca, we think it's the easy one, and because we think it's the easiest one, we don't put enough emphasis on it, and so we don't understand the real anicca. Anatta, I say, is the easiest. Many other people say it's the hardest, and the reason I say it's the easiest is because it's very clear what anatta means, that any of the five khandhas in any form whatsoever, the form, the feeling, the perceptions, and also the most important one is in sankhara, not the most important, but one of the most important, the sankhara, and I take out chetana as one of the most important parts of sankhara, that chetana is not me, not mine, not a self. It's not your will. It's not your choice. The Buddha said that many, many, many times. The chetana is not yours. It's not yours. It's not yours. It makes that because it goes against the grain. Because it's so obvious that I decided to get up this morning and come here or just to sleep in. I decided what to eat. That's what it looks like. But to actually uncover that and realize that there is no one in control. Now that's a big insight. And I've talked about that already. As for the dukkha, that too is very difficult to see. As I mentioned in question time, that the Four Noble Truths, everybody who's a Buddhist can recite the Four Noble Truths, many in Pali. Well, the Buddha said, if you really knew the Four Noble Truths, you'd be Aryan. He said, through not understanding the Four Noble Truths. That's why the Buddha said, I had to be reborn so many times through samsara, suffering, birth and death. Why? Through not understanding the Four Noble Truths. So do you understand the Four Noble Truths? And if you are, you can put your hand up and say you're an Aryan. So, there must be something you're not seeing. And that's the hardest thing, to see what you're not seeing. What we do see, what we do understand, that's easy. But it's that aspect of dukkha which we haven't yet seen. Now that is a problem. And I did mention, again, when talking about the data from the jhanas, that there you have bliss. And I've mentioned it's important you have that bliss. And don't be afraid of that bliss. As the Buddha said, don't be afraid, make much of it, follow it, develop it. Nabayitabhang, bahulikatabhang, bawetabhang, asewitabhang. Sometimes I get the order wrong, but it's those four terms. He was saying, develop it. You say, why? Did the Buddha just want the monks just to bliss out and have a happy life? Was that the purpose of monastic life, just for happiness and bliss? No, it's because experiencing that bliss, you realize that all bliss, all happiness, is an ending of suffering. It's some pain, some irritation, some affliction being taken away, that is called happiness. So it's when you experience the bliss in the jhanas, you reflect what has been taken away, what degree of suffering has been taken away, that now I'm experiencing bliss. And I'm just summing up what I said earlier on, because I want to go on to anicca. What's been taken away in the first jhana is your body and five senses. And that's the first time it's been taken away. And so now you actually realize, not as a theory anymore, that the body, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, actually is dukkha. No matter what you do with that body, no matter how healthy, fit, wealthy, powerful, no matter how, if you're a wheel-turning emperor, if you're the richest person in the world, if you have a whole harem of beautiful girls, the best possible food, whatever sensory enjoyment you can get in this world, if you had all of it, it would still be suffering. And that's the message of the first jhana. Nothing, no sensory pleasure at all, can compare when all those five senses vanish. And it hits you. The five senses are actually dukkha, no matter what you do with them, because it's an experience. And of course I mentioned the second jhana, chedana, will, is suffering. I used to call in similes the chedana like the prison guard. So you're being born in this prison, in this cell. And the prison has five high walls. And those five high walls are seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. Because that's all you experience. And the prison guard stops you from escaping. Not only stops you from escaping, but stops you from being still. Come, get up, go to the toilet, get meditation, do jhanas, go and get a nice job, go and do something. The will is actually your torturer, never allowing you to rest and be still. It is, as I said, enemy number one of enlightenment, the will. And that's why Mara is the head of the control freak realm. Control freak, those who wield power, control of others' creations. So Mara, will and Mara, they go together. So whenever you see will coming up, Mara, I know you. Recognize your will, your control, your choice, your doing, not as your friend, not something which you can use skillfully to get free from suffering. Will is the problem. You don't use it to get rid of the problem. It is the problem. Understanding that, you understand why we say letting go, stop. And that is an insight which is very open to you. It's there for you in second jhana and above. Chedana has gone, so lovely, so free to be out of this jail. So this prison guard isn't always telling me, come, sit up straight. Come on, get up, walk, do this, think, do something, plan. You've got many things to do. Don't just sit there. In Christianity, they had this word, the devil makes work for idle hands. It's totally opposite. That's why Christianity never gets enlightened. They can't sit still. But Buddhism has the opposite. Idle hands is a way to escape the devil, to escape Mara. The idle mind, the still mind, the peaceful mind. And you all understand that stillness, this is why I always said samadhi, call it stillness. Get the idea of stillness, nothing moving. Chedana stops stillness. Chedana is the enemy of stillness. Chedana is what makes things move. It agitates samsara and keeps it rolling. So, calm down. Then you understand that chedana is dukkha. It's part of the sankharas. The Buddha said that. Panchupadana kanda dukkha. Sankhara is dukkha. Chedana is part of sankhara. Chedana is suffering. Can't you let go of suffering? Can't you let go of the will? Only when you see it as an enemy, as dukkha, can you do that. Which is why that if you see these things, it is much easier to let go. So the fact you've had a hard time on this retreat letting go and getting into jhana, don't worry about that. That's nature, that's par for the course. Because you haven't seen chedana is dukkha, that's why it's hard to do. Once you've seen that chedana, will, is suffering, is a problem, it makes it much easier to let things go. You understand why. So when you understand that things like chedana is dukkha and the five senses are dukkha, there's only one thing left to see, which is dukkha, and that's the knowing, especially mano vijnana or citta. Just consciousness is dukkha. And you know the Buddha said that so many times. Consciousness, knowing is dukkha. But do you agree with that? It's hard to see. Doesn't matter what the Buddha said. The Buddha says, the Buddha says, the Buddha says. There's part of our consciousness that actually filters out what we don't want to hear. What we doesn't actually fit with our view gets filtered out. And it's only when, again, you get the jhanas, you see it just so clear that every time your consciousness loses some part of itself, it's more happy. And again, this is what happens, especially in the arupas. Your consciousness starts to disappear. just like peeling an onion. And as you peel the onion, the lighter it gets, the more happy it gets. So you peel another bit and it gets even more happy. You realize that consciousness is dukkha. What that does, it gives you the very clear understanding that if you think that once you've parinibbana, after the cessation of all, that you can be conscious and enjoy it afterwards, you really, what a dumb idea that is. There cannot be an amata jitta. If all jittas, all consciousness is suffering, then an amata jitta, a deathless suffering, is torture. It's like going to hell. Once you've seen that, you don't want to have consciousness continue. You can't wait for it to cease. And that's called parinibbana. The cessation of all the five khandhas, which includes consciousness, which includes mind, it ceases. And it never fails to amaze me how some really, really good monks just can't see that. Why do they believe in like an amrita citta? Like, after you parinibbana, you know, you're aware but no suffering. And to me that's just like crazy wisdom again. It just can't happen. If you're aware, you suffer. If you're conscious, it's dukkha. You see that. Buddha told that many times. But the reason why even many monks for many years, great meditators, still see that is because they want to see it. It's called bhava dhanha, the craving to exist. We want to be so much. And you can come up against that craving to exist. You've already experienced that many times when you've had fear come up in your meditation. Nimitta's coming up, you get afraid. Why are you afraid? Why are you afraid you're getting close to jhanas, you're going to get great bliss? What's there to fear? What's fearing is some of you is disappearing. Your idea of existence, of me being aware and being able to control things, is disappearing. Now that is fear. Fear is always something which you're very attached to, about to be taken away from you. That's my definition of fear. Something you cherish is being taken away. It hasn't been taken away yet, but it's about to be. And that terrifies you. Why? Because your whole notion of who you are is about to change. These ideas you cherish, not for just for years, for lifetimes, are being torn away from you. That's very uncomfortable, very fearful, but incredibly worthwhile. Please let it happen. And realize that these things you're being attached to were just shitty stuff. And I use that. Even the Buddha called, you know, the milhasuka. You know, and used, it was coarse word, like piss, happiness. I'm using a very coarse English word, so when you translate, coarse Sinhalese. Because that's, you know, what it meant. And once you realize that these things have been taken away from you, and you realize that's because of bhava dhanha, the craving to exist, you understand the resistance to cessation, the resistance to allowing everything to stop. Well, I've sometimes said that most human beings, we want to find a corner of samsara, even the smallest amount where we can exist and be happy ever after. So we've worked so hard to get enlightened. We want to enjoy it afterwards. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. We have to let everything go and let things cease. And it's only the attainment of so-on, when you realize there's nothing here, that you can actually let cessation happen. Otherwise, cessation can't happen. Because you won't let it happen because you think you are. The bhava dhanha is far too strong. But that was just talking about suffering, and I wanted to spend most of this talk on anicca. And I wanted to mention this because so many people think they understand anicca, they're doing anicca sanya. They watch things come and go, they watch thoughts arise and thoughts pass, vedanas, feelings in their knees come and go, they see time come and go, retreats come and go, people come and go, all sorts of things come and go. They get enlightened? No way. Because it's just superficial anicca. I use the simile of just like you're watching a lake and you can see the waves go up and the waves go down. The waves go up, the waves go down. You think you understand Anicca. See, things go up, things go down. Anyone can do that. But real Anicca, the real insight into Anicca, is when you're sitting by the lake and you see the waves go up, the waves go down. Sometimes they're tall waves, sometimes they're tiny ripples. And one day you're sitting there and the lake disappears. It vanishes. The screen on which this rise and fall takes place, that too disappears. The lake has gone, and all the mountains and sky above it have disappeared. Because when you just watch the waves come and go, you haven't seen the water come and go yet. It's just the waves, surface phenomena. When you see things totally disappear, that rocks you, because lakes aren't supposed to suddenly vanish. You've never been taught that. That's against science. It's not supposed to happen. But there, the lake has gone. Or for the lay people to watch TV. It's like you have these six channels on TV. You have sight channel, sound channel, smell channel, taste channel, tactile sensation channel, and mind channel. And you surf the channels like people do. Is anything on sight channel today? No, it's boring. What's on sound channel? Nah, that's no good. What's on mind channel? All my favourite fantasies and dreams. What's on that? And yes, you can see things rise and fall. You can see the programmes change. You can see just one channel switch to the other channel. Now you're seeing, now you're hearing, now you're having a fun time, now you're having a not so fun time. It's easy to see those six senses come and go. But it's very difficult to see the TV set disappear. Now that's the interesting one. When you're watching the TV and then suddenly the TV set's gone. It's vanished. And that's not covered by your insurance warranty. It's not supposed to happen. Where the hell has it gone? Now that's the experience of Anicca. Things have ceased, vanished, gone. Where have they gone to? This is the screens on which things are played out. Now that is a powerful Anicca. First place where I learned Pali, and I'm not an expert on Pali, but fluent enough, was I had to study Vinaya. And the reason was, in the Thai forest tradition, the Vinaya was just passed on from sort of teacher to student, student to teacher. A lot of it never made sense. There seemed to be too many errors. So when I first started looking at actually the books, what the Buddha said about Vinaya, you saw there's many errors there. But that was only the English translation, so I thought I'd better learn some Pali so I can actually understand what are the rules which I'm supposed to keep. And when you learn Pali and started looking at the Vinaya Pitaka in Pali, one of the things which I noticed was the different types of meals for monks. You know, things like salaka bhat, that's when you have the times of usually famine, you have straws which you actually, the laity, they put food down, the little straws, and you choose it by lots, not by picking a straw. And if the straw says number three, you take food number three. That was salaka bhata. You know, udesa bhata is a nimantana bhata. Udesa bhata, when the lay people say, you, and you, those three monks will come to my house tomorrow. Nimantana bhata is when, you know, they invite, say, four monks and the bhatudesaka, the monk in charge of this particular management of the monastery, he chooses which four monks are going to go today, which five monks are going to go today. But there's also a type of food called nicca bhata, which is the opposite of anicca. A nicca bhata means a regular supply of food, which means, suppose like Mr. Prem, comes to Narada Center every Friday. So every Friday is his day to give dana. And that's a regular supply of food. Every Friday. It's regular. You can count upon it. It's always there. And that was one of the great meanings of Nicca. Regular. Something is always there. And Anicca means something which was always there disappears. Friday comes and he doesn't turn up. It's never happened before. He's vanished. He's gone. And that's another meaning of Anicca. Things which were always there now are gone. Screens, TV screens vanish, lakes disappear. Things which you have counted on, relied upon, thought were always there for you, have now vanished. And it's those things which were always there, which because they were always there, you assumed were permanent. And because they were permanent, you said that that's me, that's myself. Consciousness. I'm not talking about the six forms of consciousness, but this general word which human beings think is being conscious, as being aware. It's always been there for you. Whenever you want, you can be aware. Imagine when that's taken away, that disappears. It's not what happens on that screen of awareness, it's awareness itself vanishes. Not what you're aware of, but the screen, the foundation, the floor on which awareness stands, disappears. That's what happens in the Arupas. Consciousness, mind consciousness, vanishes. Because of that, you realize, my goodness, knowing is impermanent. Because you've seen it vanish, because it's not permanent, it's obvious that cannot be a self, it cannot be me, there cannot be an amateur jitter, there cannot be existence after parinibbana. It's the cessation of all existence, it's bhava-nirodha, the cessation of existence, of being. I think even the Buddha said in one sutta, when he talks about bhava-nirodha, many monks get afraid. Because it's the hardest thing to give up of all. Yeah, you can give up your sex when you become monks. You can give up your money, your family. But to give up existence, can you give that up? That's the hardest one. But that is the final test for nirvana. Can you let that one go? Can you understand its anicca anyway? As someone once said in the interviews, they say they're doing anicca sanya, everything rises, passes away. So they realize if they actually hold on to anything, they're holding on to what's going to be taken away, they're letting themselves in for suffering. Whatever you hold on to, it's going to be taken away from you. It's anicca. It's there, now it's going to go again. So all your health, doesn't matter how healthy you are, after the doctors have come to see you, you're going to get sick again. That's why my great teacher, Ajahn Chah, when I was sick with this typhus fever, one of the worst illnesses I had, and feeling really depressed, low energy, pain, because that's what you get when you get fevers and just can't get up. I've mentioned just going to the toilet similarly, just so hard even to stand up. But then, the great master, Ajahn Chah, came into the hospital just to visit me. Now imagine that, this great monk comes to visit you. And all my sort of pain and depression just vanished. I thought, I was so inspired and honoured and just grateful that a great master would come to see me in hospital. But my elation only lasted about 5 seconds until Ajahn Chah gave me a Dhamma teaching. He only stayed by my bedside about 5 seconds. Because what he said, Brahma Wangsa, you'll either get better or you'll die. And then he went out. He's a great master. No messing around. No, how are you feeling today? Is it getting better? Are you being well looked after? And everything's okay back in the monastery? They're looking after your things in your heart? None of that sort of stuff. Straight punch right to the jitter. You're either going to get better or you're going to die. That's not what I wanted to hear, but I thought about it afterwards. And you couldn't fault him. That's the trouble. That was the worst thing. He never made mistakes. It was straight true, and I hated that. So when you are sick, it's not going to last. You're going to get better or you're going to die. Other way it's not going to last. So what's the big problem? Health and sickness, sickness and health, youth, old age, all that sort of stuff. So it is true, whatever you hold on to, you're opening yourself up for suffering. So at least as a monk we should have very few attachments, the very least of possessions, the very least of, not physical possessions, but even spiritual possessions as well. Anyone who's a spiritual materialist, anyone who's very proud they were so one, is going to be taken away from you when you find out you're not. And that's suffering. It's anicca. Don't hold on to anything. The idea of so-one, sakadagami, anagami, arahat is having less pegs to put things on, less attachments. You're becoming much more like the lotus. Nothing sticks to you. And when nothing sticks to you at all, you can have no attachment because the mind is totally Teflon. Not even arahat sticks to you. It falls off. Now that's an arahat. If you understand what I'm talking about, it's total gone. Now this is actually when we're talking about anicca. That superficial type of anicca, many people can understand, but the deeper type, when things disappear, that shocks you. And this is jhana experience, classic jhana experience. You're going in there and this is weird. All jhana experiences, especially for the first time, are the weirdest things you've ever experienced. Yeah, you're aware, but it's totally different than anything you've known before. That's why it shocks you afterwards. Why many people will say, that was huge, that was, but what the hell was it? Because your reference points, where you compare things, is just so difficult. So that's why many times you have to have experience of jhana several occasions before you can really get to understand it. First time, it just blows you away that something like that could happen. It is like the lake has vanished. Where is that gone? Shouldn't go, but it has gone. That's when you contemplate all these things which for you were there. The screens which you assumed were permanent. Yeah, you understood. The programs came and go. Yeah, that's easy to understand. But to understand even the TV set is subject to cessation. Can just dissolve and go to nothing. That's a very tough one to understand, unless you experience it. And to understand that all these five khandhas, all of them can just cease without remainder, are subject to cessation. That changes the whole ball game, as they say in the West. Whole understanding of what we're here for. It's not to enhance the five khandhas, to shine them up and get rid of their faults. It's not like taking a vehicle like a car, which is not riding smoothly, and take it to the mechanic so they can tune it up, oil everything, so it runs perfectly without ever breaking down. It's not just trying to get this life of yours tuned up, all the sort of faults in it taken out, so it can just run smoothly into some sort of heavenly existence. No, it's just taking the car to the mechanic and letting the mechanic allow the car to vanish. So it's gone, you haven't got no car anymore. Now of course that's tough for people to understand. That's why I don't usually teach like this, except to monks. If I teach like this many times to lay people, they don't want to be Buddhist anymore. They want to be Christians. They want to go to heaven. They want to enjoy life. They're not ready to disappear yet. They're not ready to check out of the hotel. But this is what real Buddhism is. And that's why, and even the Buddha said, it's so hard for people to understand this. But there are some people with little dust in their eyes. People can maybe, just maybe, understand this is reasonable. To understand that where else can suffering end? Look at just Vedana, just the rise and fall of Vedana. You notice that this is a pretty easy contemplation, but it's very powerful. Every time you have pain, what is it? Does it last very long? Doesn't matter what pain you have, it's always followed by pleasure. And pleasure is followed by pain. So all that sukha vedana is just the space between dukkha vedana. Dukkha vedana, sukha vedana, dukkha vedana, sukha vedana, that's called life. And you can't have just only dukkha vedana. It has to be followed by sukha vedana. You can only go to hell realm for so long, and then you have to leave. I read this story in a review of a book on torture. It's a very gross subject, but it just shows you just dukkha vedana and sukha vedana, how they work. This was in Argentina about 30 years ago, when the country was run by a military junta, and many people were arrested without any warrant by the army and the navy. And they were taken to underground cells and tortured. and was one journalist because he was well connected to the United States. He disappeared in the middle of the night. They took him to the underground cells and tortured him. But when his wife contacted the journalists in the United States and they realized he was missing, they put a lot of pressure on the government so he could not be killed. He survived. And he told the story of what happened. But the particular part of this, it was a book called Prisoner Without a Name, Soul Without a Number. It's a very interesting book on torture. But the particular passage, which really gave me an insight into Sukha and Dukkha and the Vedana. He'd been in this underground torture chamber for weeks or months, being put on these electric shock machines, you know, regularly to torture him. They didn't need any information, it was just pure sadistic ill will. But one day, the prison guards gave him a letter from his wife. And he said, when he recounted his experience, that because of his views, which he published in the newspaper, he'd given explicit instructions to his wife, if ever I'm arrested and disappear, don't write to me, please don't write to me. She did not keep that advice, and this is what happened afterwards. He read that letter in his prison cell, and that just made all the torture so much more painful. It gave him something to contrast the painful experiences he was going through day after day, the memory of the life at home with his wife and family. He had blotted that out. And because now he could remember Sukha, the Dukkha became even more painful. And that is why, I shouldn't be saying this, but people who know about torture, you don't just torture people. You give them their favorite meal, show them their favorite movie, and then you torture them again. That makes it hurt so much more. That's because Sukha and Dukkha, they run after each other. You cannot have one without the other. So that's why when you are suffering, it won't last. When you're having happiness, it won't last. You can't have perfect happiness. It's totally impossible. So understanding that, you totally detach from Sukha and Dukkha. Sukha Dukkha itself is Dukkha. You can never have any freedom from that, except when all Sukha Dukkha, all Vedana vanishes. That's the only time you have any freedom. Otherwise you're compelled to be in a prison one day, in a holiday camp the next day. One moment in heaven, the next moment in hell. And then for many of you, that's been like this retreat. One moment, beautiful Nimitta, next minute, I can't get anywhere. Welcome to samsara. It goes round, remember. You can't always stay at the top. You can't always have jhana. Yeah, you get to the top of the wheel, you get jhana, you've got to go underneath again, then you go up again. Sukha Dukkha. Now that anicca sanya means you're not so controlling of happiness and suffering anymore. You just can't control it, actually you just make it worse. The more you try to control Sukha Dukkha, you just make more dukkha for yourself. When you just leave it alone, it's just ordinary Sukha Dukkha. So it's not too much problem. But it's still a problem. And once you see that, you can't do anything about this world. It's always going to have suffering, it's always going to have happiness. In whatever realm of existence you get reborn into, it makes it very clear the only thing a person can do is to stop all of this conscious experience. See, it is subject to cessation. It's a big relief. Yang kinchi samudaya dhammang sabantang nirodha dhammantu. Oh, thank goodness for that. All that is subject to arise, the five khandhas, is subject to cessation. Whoopee! There's an end to suffering. So then that's obviously the experience of spring winning. And of course once you see that, once you see there's no self in there, there's no thing to hold on to, that the screen disappears, it's disappeared once, and that gives you the clue that there's nothing really there, you've nothing to hold on to, then you can let go. It's possible to let go. In fact, it becomes automatically letting go. You can't help yourself. So that's why once you become a stream winner, you can't suddenly stop and say, no, I'm now going to become a bodhisattva. I'm going to push off my enlightenment so I can become a Buddha in some future life to help all other beings. You just can't do that. Remember, your chaitanya is not under your control. Your will is an automatic process. So you can't help but become an arahant. You've just got no choice. It's like getting on a bus. You know some of these buses, they only stop when they get to Colombo, they don't stop on the way. So once you're on that bus, you can bang on the door, say, let me out, they won't let you out until they get to Colombo. That's the bus to Nirvana. If you become a stream winner, you're on the bus, let me out, I want to help all sentient beings. Sorry, we're not stopping till Nirvana. And that's what it's like, so you've got no choice. You know, you never did have a choice anyway. It's totally brainwashed, conditioned process. You're not in charge of your will. So these things stop. So anicca sanya, the perception of impermanence, is not just rise and fall. See things totally disappear, vanish. That's why they... What is that whole process? From samadhi pachaya yathabhuta yanadasana. From stillness you see things as they truly are. Yathabhuta yanadasana pachaya nibbida. Nibbida is just, what am I holding on to this mess for? I'm not going to hold on to this mess. To hell with all this stuff. And then nibbida pachaya viraga. This is one sequence anyway. Viraga does not just mean dispassion, it also means fading away. And I prefer the fading away. Because this is actually what you experience. Samsara fades away. Just like this phantom, which gets more and more see-through, like a ghost vanishing. You see it there like a person. And then you start to see through them. And they just vanish slowly. And then they're gone. This is a vanishing of the will. So vanishing of the body, first of all, as you get into jhanas. The vanishing of the will, it just fades. And it's gone. Because viraga leads to cessation. Things have stopped. Cessation. Nibbana. Let go. And parinibbana. Everything disappeared. Gone at last. Poof, you vanished. No more five senses. No more six senses. No more khandhas. No more you. You finish. But some people ask, but I don't want to go. We've got no choice, sorry. I've already brainwashed you enough. Too late now. So they sometimes people ask, well, isn't that just what they call annihilation? And of course that's what people ask to the Buddha, and they say, this is annihilation. It's not annihilation. Annihilation is destroying something which is already there. It's not annihilation, it's cessation. Just a process which is now finishing. No one is being destroyed. You're not destroying the self. You're just letting go of the delusion. The illusion, there was nothing there to begin with. And to finish off anicca, or this particular session, is one of those great experiences which I had with my teacher Ajahn Chah. On this series of talks, I've given lots and lots and lots and lots of information. Because we're only together for a short time, then I have to go somewhere else. That's why I packed in a lot and lot of information. But when you're living with a great teacher, you don't get the best teachings from the discourses. It's just when you're with a person, and every now and again they just hit you with one or two important sayings. Just like I mentioned Ajahn Chah, when he went to visit me in hospital, you either get better or you'll die. Like I encourage that, if you visit a fellow monk who's very sick, please do that to them. Don't go and say to your best friend who's a monk, how are you doing today? Even if it's a Mahanayaka. If it's a Mahanayaka, go and see them and say, Venerable Sir, you're going to get better or you're going to die. You might not get any promotion in the ranks, but But I'll certainly appreciate it. Especially if they're a forest monk, a meditator. You know, just tell it how it as it is. So the best teachings I got from a monk like Ajahn Chah was just anecdotes, just not a formal teaching, but when he said something to you which really hit home. And on this particular occasion, it's a famous story, I wrote about this in the book Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond. Towards the end of my teacher's teaching career, he got a stroke. He had water on the brain. He was actually working too hard. So please, don't work your monks too hard. So he was working so hard, he wasn't resting at all. And that's why he had this water on the brain, which destroyed a lot of the brain. But before that happened, he was starting to feel sick. And again, because the Western monks, we'd actually looked at the Vinaya, we saw that there was something in the time of the Buddha called a Jantagara, like a fire room. It was like the sauna. And as monks, many of the monks, they remember the time when they used saunas, and they said, well, look, it was actually allowed in the Vinaya Pitaka for monasteries to have saunas. So why don't we build one, for ourselves, but also for our teacher? And maybe it might, help his health. But there was also an underlying motive, because at that particular time, I was staying with many of the other Western monks in a monastery about 6 kilometers from where Ajahn Chah was staying. So we thought, if we made this sauna in our monastery, our teacher Ajahn Chah would come over at least once a week. And we'd be able to see our teacher, he'd be able to give us a teaching. And it was a very good plan, well exercised, and it worked. So Ajahn Chah would come over to our monastery once a week, and he would give a nice Dharma discourse. We could ask any questions, and then he'd go and have his sauna. And this had been going on for many weeks, and on this one occasion, Ajahn Chah had given a magnificent discourse. And sometimes it really hits home and you get so inspired. And if you ever get inspired by a discourse, don't wait to listen to the translation. Just go out and meditate and use the energy. Because that's what I did. I was so inspired. Instead of actually doing my duties to a teacher, which is helping him in the sauna, there's other monks to do that, I went round the back of the hall and meditated. And because you were inspired, it was so easy to get into a deep meditation. That's why I say inspiration is a really great cause of samadhi. Anything which has inspired you, even you inspire yourself, sit down, you get instant piti sukha. So I got a very beautiful meditation. And again, in those deep meditations, you don't know how much time has gone past. So I got out afterwards and the first thought was my teacher. So much gratitude to your teacher for allowing you and giving you encouragement and inspiration to get into these wonderful states. What can I do for him? And I thought, there may be a chance he's still in the sauna, because sometimes it takes a couple of hours. We're talking to people and undressing and getting in there, getting massaged and drying up and washing everything afterwards. So I thought there may be a chance I could still do some duties. So I went walking towards where the sauna was located. But I realised I was too late, because I saw Ajahn Chah coming in the opposite direction. We were going to cross on the path. And so I had no choice, I had to sort of go up to him. And that's when he looked me in the eye. A very fierce, but kind gaze. He was reading my mind. And good monks don't do this all the time. It's only when there's something useful to read. They look at your mind. A lot of time, I'm not going to look at your mind. It's rubbish. Crikey, I've got much better things to do than that. But because he noticed, because the facial features, the smile, I just emerged from a good meditation. He saw that and checked me out. And then he stopped me. And that's when he tried to give me like a seed of enlightenment. Just like the Buddha did to Bahia. Sometimes the Buddha could see someone is ready. And so we tried to make that last jump now from samadhi to yathabhuta jnanadasana, to see things as they truly are. So he looked me in the eye and said, I'll do the Thai translation into English. Bhagavansa, why? That's how he talked. He grabbed you and asked me the question, why? My mind went blank. And the answer came out, I don't know. I said, I was stupid. I'm only a few raids as a monk. Now, great teachers will never scold you. Great teachers just laugh at you. So we burst out laughing, these stupid monks. Now, we were so stupid in those days, we caused him so much happiness. He had so many reasons to laugh. So you never upset the teachers, you just make them burst out laughing with your stupid antics. So then he screwed up his face again. And he said, Brahma Wangsa, I will tell you the answer. So if anyone ever asks you the question, why? This is the correct answer. And I was really interested now. I was getting personal teachings from one of the great monks. The answer to the question, why? So I was really listening. He said, Brahma Wangsa, the answer to the question, why, is... You interested? The answer to the question, why, is... There is nothing. There's nothing there. He looked at me, said, do you understand? I said, yes. He said, no, you don't. Oh, the great ties of the great teacher. And then he walked off. He left his stupid disciple to think about this for years and years and years. And of course, you do contemplate such such great teachings. And that's much better than what you see in the suttas. It's live teachings. It gets right inside of you. You think, what the hell did he mean? Why? There's nothing. There's nothing there. So what are you worried about? What are you striving for? Nothing there. Nothing to do but to let go. Cease. Why? Because there's nothing to keep. There's nothing there. So there's a great teaching from a great monk. And how do you know there's nothing there? To see everything disappear. And please, don't give nothing a name. Because some people think that nothing is a place you go to. Nowhere is the realm called Nibbana. No self is the experience of the real being. They give no self a name. I mention the story again from English literature. This is the one from Lewis Carroll and Alice in Wonderland. It's a wonderful story how people, they hear the word nothing and they think it's something you gain, and nowhere is the place. And no one is a person with that name. Because in this little story from English literature, this character Alice finishes her journey by coming to see the Red Queen. And the Red Queen asks her, I'm waiting for my messenger who's been travelling on the same road. Did you see anyone on the journey? And Alice said, I saw no one, Majesty. You saw no one? What great eyes you've got. It's hard enough for me to see someone, but you can actually see no one. You've got great eyesight. So, but I'm looking for my messenger. Did anybody pass you on the road? He said, nobody passed me on the road. That must have been my messenger because he walks very fast. And so it goes on like this, where it makes nobody a person, nowhere a place, and nothing a possession you gain at the end of the path. Be careful in the Udana, where it says there is ajata, asankata, what's the other words? Abhuta. These aren't names and realms. These are the absence of birth, the absence of...